Good afternoon and welcome to this Oxford Energy podcast. I'm here, my name is James Henderson. I'm the director of the gas program at OIES, and I'm here today with Vitaly Yermakov, who is the head of the Center for Energy Policy Research at the National Research University Higher School of Economics in Moscow. Vitaly, welcome this afternoon.
Thank you very much.
Vitaly is writing a paper for us on the Russian gas surplus, much discussed over the past few years, and his thoughts on how it's going to develop or not going forward. Vitaly, perhaps we could start by discussing, or you could tell us, how did the surplus develop in the first place?
Well, first of all, having a lot of extra gas available has its pluses and minuses. And obviously, when Russia ended up having about 200 BCM of gas overall sitting idle, available to users, but sitting idle essentially, that was a problem because it meant that a lot of investment is not paying back properly. The reason Russia ended up with so much available gas was really the result of a big investment decision that was made by Russian decision makers in the early 2000s to go forward with the development of new gas province on Yamal. It was the time when Europe was desperate, trying to find additional sources of gas, and all the forecasts at the time were suggesting that Europe's gas consumption is going to grow very aggressively. With this expectation in mind, Russia invested a lot into creating new capacity and a new gas province that is going to work as Russia's workhorse for the next 50 years. Well, as we know, the expectations didn't work out exactly the way sort of the forecasters thought they would. And European gas consumption started to decline on the back of extremely high gas prices. And at some point, I think Europe's gas consumption went down by almost 100 BCM from the peak. This left Russia, which up until now has been supplying almost 90% of its pipeline gas to Europe, and only 10% of Russia's gas supply goes to Asia as LNG from Sakhalin, basically with a dilemma on how to manage this spare productive capacity.
And so not only, if I remember correctly, not only was European demand disappointing, but at the time, the independents and Rosneft and Novatek also increased production and took market share in Russia. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Well, Gazprom and independents basically had this interesting division of labor. For some time, Gazprom was really worried about a gap emerging in its gas supply, and different means were found to manage this perceived gap. First of all, Gazprom was relying on importing a lot of gas from Central Asia. It led Russian independent gas producers to develop their projects and increase their market share. I think no one expected that Russian independents would become so successful because they really managed to not only to grow their output, but most importantly, capture a very attractive niche in the Russian gas market, signing long-term contracts with premium consumers, with the power plants and big industrials. And so it was not just the increase in the overall share of the domestic market, but the capturing of the premium segment of the domestic market in Russia. But nevertheless, it was a fine balance, basically, because Gazprom, again, was trying to find ways to manage the perceived production gap. And when consumption declined so rapidly, and especially external consumption in Europe, well, that was, as I said, sort of the starting point for building up of all these surpluses on the production side.
So we've got this surplus, and Gazprom has invested you know, with in hindsight, invested too early in the Yamal fields, particularly Bobrynenkovskoye. So how did it manage the surplus? How did it manage the flexibility that it's obviously offered Europe as a result of having the surplus?
Well, I don't think we can characterize this as a misstep by Gazprom, because sort of it takes so much time between investment decision and the time when sort of all these big projects can actually start producing, that there was no way to predict all these developments. But obviously, once you have this, you need to perform the balancing role. And in Russia, the supergiant fields that basically Gazprom has are well suited to the function of balancing, because it's Cinnamonian gas. Generally, you can stop and restart the production there with not much risk to losing the productive capacity. Gazprom used recently Zapolyarna field, which is sort of the last of the supergiants developing the Dnipro-Tas area, as the key balancing asset. Obviously, other fields in the Dnipro-Tas, other Cinnamonian gas fields, but Zapolyarna has been the largest balancing asset.
Okay. And so we've had the situation, Gazprom's been using Zapolyarna as a balancing item, but over the last couple of years, we've all seen Gazprom's exports to Europe on the rise. So I take it the situation has changed a bit.
Well, yes, and after Europe sort of returned to the growth in its consumption, and even more importantly, when its import requirements started to grow on the back of falling indigenous production, sort of this opened a niche that Gazprom, owing to the nature of its long-term contracts, was able to fill relatively easily. This gas was available on a short notice. Basically, the Europeans could nominate higher volumes, which they did, and Gazprom was ready and willing to supply all this additional gas. In the past few years, low gas prices also helped the consumers to take more gas, and so far, it worked wonders with respect to higher call on Russia's gas. I believe we added about 50 BCM over the past 4 years in terms of overall call on Russian gas from Europe.
So as that demand has risen, Gazprom's production has rebounded, and the implications for surplus capacity are what?
Well, there are several things are happening at the same time. Legacy production is declining, just a natural decline. This is happening. Gazprom has been ramping up Bavanenkovo, new gas from Yamal. And the balancing fields, Zapolyarna first of all, they have been also ramping up in response to the rising demand. So these two tendencies, basically decline of the legacy fields and the ramp up of production at Bavanenkovo and at Zapolyarna, they really reduced the spare productive capacity. And another big development was not only higher actual export call on Russian gas, but also much higher refill of storage in the past 2 years. Additional volumes went into storage both in Russia and in Gazprom's storages in Europe. So that was also a significant factor that reduced spare productive capacity.
So we've all been sitting, looking at Gazprom and assuming that there is this big gas bubble, as some people have called it, in Russia, which is there to bail us out in cold winters or whatever, but I think your research is suggesting that we're coming to the end of that time, and that even though there's still some spare capacity left, that on a monthly, daily basis, that we now need to start worrying about it. Would that be correct?
Well, Gazprom has been firing on all cylinders recently in terms of delivering as much gas as possible via its most important export routes. And Nord Stream 1 has been operating at over 100% of capacity. Generally, it was possible to do that because this new pipeline can work under higher operating pressures. And other routes also have been utilized at almost 100% during periods of peak demand. And this is very important because sort of when we say that Gazprom, for example, at the moment still has about 50 BCM of spare productive capacity, this doesn't take into account seasonal fluctuations, but the seasonality of Russian gas demand is tremendous, especially in Russia, because of obviously of extreme temperatures in winter time, and the peaks can be very difficult to cover if they sort of happen at the same time in Europe and in Russia in terms of extreme cold.
So would you say that we're essentially on peak days, there's now zero spare capacity? Is that the conclusion?
Well, it well might be, or rather, it requires a lot of advanced planning in terms of how you manage your storage. And again, sort of the market is responding quite appropriately, trying to refill as much storage capacity as possible, because sort of we had a few years when storage was sort of not filled, but now sort of these levels go up.
So is Gazprom motivated now, having reduced the spare capacity, to invest in new fields yet, or are we in a situation where
this is always the case? I mean, there are always investments in new productive capacity, but it's a fine balancing act. You need to manage your decline rates and at the same time make sure that you have a sufficient investment in new gas. What I think is important is that Gazprom will be adding production capacity basically around Bavanenko area, adding the third block production block on Bavanenkova, going to Harasove, which is farther north from Bavanenkova, basically adding productive capacities that would eventually go via Bavanenkova, Ukhta, Torzhok, and towards Nord Stream finally, sort of basically towards its key market in Europe, which is Germany. Also, there are still sufficient productive capacities in Adimputas that ultimately would go into new pipelines that go to Turkey and the Black Sea. A lot of spare transportation capacity is going to emerge in the Central Corridor, which historically has been going towards Ukraine. I mean, in addition to supplying Russian domestic consumers, it would go towards Ukraine and then via Ukraine to Europe. So that's the only part of Russia's gas transportation system where we see a lot of spare transportation capacity emerging. And sort of this means that either there will be sort of Russian independence ramping up their output, but with uncertainty about Ukrainian transit, sort of it's difficult to know exactly whether they're going to do that or when they're going to do that. Or Gazprom maybe actually will be sort of retiring some parts of the transportation system and not investing heavily into sort of additional production in the importers.
So essentially you're suggesting that the Russian export strategy is very much targeted towards an expanded Nord Stream, i.e. Nord Stream 2 being constructed and built, and also towards at least two lines of Turkish Stream, and naturally Ukraine transit would decline.
What I'm saying is that Russia is going to match sort of its developments in the upstream with the sort of with its export strategy, because it makes sense for Russia to export more via these new transportation corridors, which are very efficient. Basically, they allow for it's new steel, new pipes that allow for greater working pressures of the system, and new compressor stations have a lot of more capacity. So basically, it's unit costs of transporting gas via these new pipelines are significantly lower than going through the old system, where working pressure is below sort of the installed standard historical one. And basically it makes sense to work with the area that is going to grow this new with new gas, connecting new gas with your premium target markets, rather than trying sort of to save the declining base and connect it to the corridor that has all these transit risks and uncertainties and a lot of risks, basically both political and economic.
Yeah, I mean, you've mentioned independence. Do you think, I mean, Novatek and Rosneft have got plans for increasing production over the next 2 to 3 years? Do you think that can help, you know, free up Gazprom gas for export, or is that story now played out?
Well, I mean, the independents had very aggressive plans, and part of these plans were based on the assumption that Russian domestic gas prices, which are still regulated for Gazprom, not regulated for independents, but generally sort of because of the big share of regulated price, they tend to be within the same, about in the same area in terms of price levels. These prices would go up and ultimately reach export parity levels. This hasn't happened because first, prices at export markets were too high. Then, of course, when they dropped, there was this very short period of time when Russian domestic prices were about the same as export netbacks. But now that export price started to recover, there's again a significant gap between prices for gas in Russia and basically your other netbacks that you can receive by exporting your gas. To add to that, the drastic ruble depreciation had basically has changed the calculation, because in dollar terms, obviously, domestic Russian gas prices became much lower, even though sort of they have been going up in the ruble terms. This changed the economics for many of the projects that the independents have been planning, and I don't think sort of they are going to be as aggressive as they were telling us 3 years ago. And Novatek basically, I think, is going to be about flat in terms of its domestic output. Rosneft may add production at Rospan, but they are facing the sort of the problem of profitability for many of their projects.
Okay, so all right. So we got this, the pressure that building. Then we've got increased demand for Russian gas in Europe. We've got Gazprom having to consider its investments. We've got independents who aren't going to invest quite as rapidly as we thought. I mean, the other potential draw on Russian gas, which has just become a topic again, is China. And obviously, we've got the East Siberian gas, but now there's talk about the Western pipeline re-emerging, which could also take gas from West Siberia that might otherwise have gone to Europe. Is that a serious risk? I mean, not a serious risk for Russia, but a serious risk for Europe now?
Well, for Russia, diversifying its gas exports has been a long-standing strategy. Of course, it is the case when China has to decide whether it wants Russian gas or not, because Russia was willing and ready to supply. And the problem with the Altai route historically was that basically China secured gas from Central Asia, which would arrive essentially to the same area in China, in the west of China. So the Altai route somehow sort of was put on the back burner. Now all of a sudden, China said that it wants to resume negotiations, and this happened after a difficult winter when Turkmen gas, to everybody's surprise, was not available for China in the volumes it expected. No one has a good explanation so far whether it was part of Turkmenistan's sort of commercial strategy to put some pressure on China, or it was basically due to technical problems in Turkmenistan's gas fields, or it was basically something else. But the fact remains that China didn't get enough Central Asian gas last winter, and now it is discussing with Gazprom sort of the possibilities of getting supplies via the Altai pipeline. If indeed these negotiations are successful, basically adding capacity for Altai, building additional pipeline capacity, adding compressor stations, because there's already a significant portion of the pipelines along these routes that are in place. They just need expansion, some new loopings, and some new construction. Additional compressor stations, but generally it can be done relatively easily because sort of it's the area where the right of way has power supply, and generally with the ending of putting linear part for Power of Siberia, Gazprom would have all the contractors ready and willing to work with all the necessary equipment ready. So basically, this could be done relatively quickly.
Okay, so essentially, what we're saying then is that, you know, China could, in the not too distant future, take some of this remaining spare capacity, so there'll be even less for Europe. So just to wrap up, how do you then see Russian gas export strategy to Europe moving forward? There's obviously political pressure in Europe and attempts to diversify away from Russia, which obviously Gazprom and the Kremlin see. We've got this reduced spare capacity now. How do you see the next few years in terms of Russian gas export strategy?
Well, first of all, again, the factors that increased Russia's spare gas production capacity, they were transitory in nature. They eventually were supposed to end, and they're ending. This is quite natural. It is very unusual to have a lot of spare productive capacity in the first place. So now things are getting back to normal. And going forward, again, if European gas consumers would want sort of assurances of future supply from Russia under long-term contract arrangements, they need to secure this. People who hope that basically the spot market would always provide them with available volumes may find themselves in a situation when all of a sudden the market gets tight and there's not enough gas that is readily available to especially at times of peak demand. And so it's again it's an old trade-off between how you manage your risk, whether you want a long-term contract. Especially the contracts with Russia, they still have a lot of embedded flexibility because there's a lot of flexibility in terms of nominating gas within the relatively broad range between minimum and maximum volumes that Gazprom would supply. Or people would basically would try to manage their risk by working different financial strategy on the spot market, playing the futures curve.
Okay, that's very interesting. Well, Vitaly, thank you very much indeed. We've come to the end of our time. That was a fascinating insight into this current situation in Russia. You can find further podcasts from OIES on our website at www.oxfordenergy.org. But for now, Vitaly, thank you very much indeed, and good afternoon.
Well, thanks for having me.